And welcome back once again to the Endurance Hour podcast, episode 390. Back alongside Coach Wendy Mader, and I'm Dave Erickson. Glad to have you with us this week. If you're watching on YouTube, Coach Wendy looks a little different today, and it has nothing to do with your birthday. It has to do with your hairstyle. Is this an annual thing? What is this this thing that you do when you like start fresh? Is it spring related that you cut it all off?
This is never been, I don't think in my life have I ever been this short, but I do get my haircut during my birth week. So my birthday was March 9th, and usually sometime during that week, I will schedule a haircut. And it used to be the only time a year I'd get my hair cut. The only other time a year I do my hair is if I'm doing a big event, say in October, then I'll get my hair done like before I go to the Kona Ironman World Championships. But for the most part, I get my hair done once a year, and it happens to be during my birth week because it's just the something I do to celebrate myself. Mm-hmm. And a couple months ago, probably at the end of last year, I was just had this feeling of, I don't want my hair touching my body. I want my hair. I just want it all chopped off. But I'm going to wait till March. I'm not going to do it before March. And so I waited, and I was getting really anxious because I just wanted it all gone. Just wasn't quite sure how short I was going to go until the day of. And the woman, Hannah, who's been doing my hair for the last 4 years, we decided, let's go chin length or a little bit shorter and see what happens.
Yeah. Is that one of the things where you shake your head and go, this doesn't feel right? Because usually you have that little flick for your long hair.
No, it doesn't feel like that at all. It feels like I wash my hair and I put my hand through my hair and I'm like, oh my gosh, this feels wonderful. Oh. It's really light and I'm like, it's not touching my neck or my back very much. And it's just, I don't do anything with it. And that the point I'm making is I didn't do anything with long hair except maybe braid it or put it in a bun. And so I was constantly putting my hair up in some way, shape, or form so it wasn't touching me. So then I'm like, I'm just going to go short so then I don't have to deal with a bun or a braid or anything. And my hair grows very fast. And so I bet you in like 3 or 4 months, it's going to be back down to my shoulders already.
Is this a common thing with women? I'm kind of guessing that maybe we got a lot of female listeners here. Is this a common thing you're always having to deal with? Maybe because you're a swimmer, it's like, this is such a pain in the butt to have to put up to wash after the chlorine and workouts into a helmet. I mean, what's a common thing with women in hair as triathletes?
I'm probably not the common woman who deals with my hair because I don't deal with my hair. Like I wear a swim cap. I take my swim cap off. And when my hair was long, I would twist it up and put it in a bun to get it off my body. I really didn't really take care of it with a brush. So it would really get tangled and knotty. In the summer times when I'm constantly, you know, full of sweat, chlorine from getting in and out of the pool, sunscreen, you know, I basically would rinse my body off multiple times a day, but I wouldn't really clean my hair. I wouldn't really do it because I'm like, well, tomorrow morning in less than 8 hours, I'm either going to be working out again or I'm going to be back in the pool. And so someone like me as a swimmer, you know, my shower is jumping in the chlorine. And so that's kind of how my livelihood has been because I've just been a swimmer my whole life. And again, I just don't take care of my hair. So I decided I just don't want that much of it anymore to not have to take care of. I don't prioritize my hair. It's not something that I do, probably like most women would. And I also think, you know, I did turn 50. I'm kind of at a new phase of my life. Not just because I turned 50, but just with, you know, my change of plans for my sport. I'm you know, into ultras now, and I'm not really doing triathlon for the time being. And so just a lot, you know, I just like changes, and changing my hair was one of those changes I wanted to make.
Just another chapter in your storied career.
Yep.
This is weird. I mean, only because you brought it up and we're talking about hair, and I don't care. My hair is grays in the temples pretty strong.
Uh-huh.
And I joke with my wife a few months ago, saying, hey, I'm going to go blonde just to do something totally stupid and real. I think we talked about it maybe.
Yeah.
It's going to do that. And then it's like, nah, you're right. It probably would look, you know, like that guy is going through, you know, the phase. I'm always going through phases, but you know, that phase, the midlife and like, trying to recapture the youth. Uh-huh. I am definitely past my prime. So a week and a half ago, I went to a salon, Google salon near me, because the local haircutting place doesn't do hair color. Mm-hmm. And so I had a few hours and it took longer than I thought. I went in, I go, you know what? I'm going to do something strange here. I'm going to go the opposite coloring wise. Let's gray it all and let's catch up with the temples versus let's just kind of color all dark. Uh-huh. And she goes, I love it. And I don't know what, if that's just kind of salon speak, like, oh, this is gonna be great. I said, I haven't told my wife. Oh, I love that. This is gonna be so fun.
Yeah. You know?
Anyways, I get the tinfoil things. They're doing the little painting on it, got into a sun lamp and did that for 20 minutes, rinsed off, and she started blow drying it. And like, wow, that looks like a different guy. Wasn't quite like I was hoping it was gonna be. I kind of showed her, this is, don't go literal here, but I showed her a picture of George Clooney now, because he's got very silverish, grayish, pepperish hair.
Right.
I go, how can I catch up? And like, let's just say I want to look like my temples. You know, they're all gray. If I wanted to make the whole head kind of like gray, but a little salt and pepper in there, how would I look? And she did it, but it looked more blondish. There was, it looked silverish because she was using the term silver fox. Okay, we're going to go silver fox on you. It's like, okay, I can see where we're going with it. My hair is not long enough for those, for all the women out there, for those tinfoil things to hang on, to hold on to, so she could do the long, sweeping, painting strokes. So I'm going to do the best I can here, but it's going to look okay. And then she gave me a shampoo that's going to help blonde it more. Something about the tone of it, you know, later, it'll get blonder. Anyways, it started looking more blonde, versus silverish. Uh-huh. So for a week of that, and you know what the funny thing is, I kept wearing a hat for the first 3 days after I got it done, and I would shower and I would like run fat, not run, I walk fast between the shower and, you know, the closet to get dressed. And at night she wouldn't be able to see the actual color of the hair, and it wasn't that strong. It wasn't, you know, strictly gray like I was hoping it would be. It was, you know, it was building into it, but by the time I showed her the hair, it looked more blondish. Mm-hmm. It didn't look good. Admittedly, it's like, you know, it didn't look good. She goes, you did this yourself, didn't you? You went and bought a box of hair color and you did it yourself.
Oh, wow.
I said, no, I actually paid a couple hundred bucks for this job and didn't turn out. I mean, I have to laugh it off. It didn't work out very well. So, and she was
saying, did you go back?
She said, I look like a serial killer. You know, I look like a scary person. And so yesterday I bought a box of dark brown hair color. So for the next 6 to 7, 8 weeks, it should be blackish dark now. So the gray blondish that I bought, had it done, is gone. So you can't see it, but it's I got the black back.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you do.
And
did you take a picture or anything?
You can kind of, I actually did one video in the cold plunge 2 nights ago, and you can kind of see it.
Okay.
That's the best color you'll be able to see of any pictures. I didn't show anybody. I didn't tell anybody. Mm-hmm. It didn't look like I thought it was going to look. It looked more blondish. Mm-hmm. It's a weird topic for an endurance podcast.
Well, so when she does my hair, she always says to put a toner in it because my hair,
that's what it was.
Yeah. My hair doesn't really take a lot to stuff. And so I asked her, I go, what exactly does the toner do? And she explained to me the spectrum of colors and how people's bodies and what they eat can impact the color of the tone, what the toner's supposed to bring out. And so the first day my hair didn't have as much lightness as I wanted it to, but it definitely, once I showered it, it actually brightened up and it's exactly what I wanted. Mm. But she had told me she had done another woman's hair that turned green. Ooh. Because of the toner and the chemicals of the highlights or whatever she was doing didn't mesh well. And again, she just went on, and I can't speak to it, but I was just curious. She went on to say how what you eat and that's just, you know, in your cells and your hair is a bunch of cells that impacts the actual color it's going to turn out. And so in your case, even though the color that it turned out was not the color that was spread on your hair, that's just what happened with the toner.
Yeah. I was kind of hoping for this personality shift when I had all this silver hair. Cause I'm 50, coming up in 51. And I think, well, I just, my hair is naturally pretty dark and I haven't really had anything on top change. It's always the temples that get gray. And then I'll get some of these box colors and I'll just do the whole head. It's like, oh, let me just maybe just gradually look my age, even though I don't, you know, my hair is dark. Uh-huh. I'll look my age for the fun of it. It didn't work out. So I'm just going to go, I'll keep on doing this and just until the top decides to catch up with the temples.
Nice.
Or just goes away completely. Mm-hmm. Who knows? All right. That concludes our hair topic for the Endurance Hour podcast. Let's move on to some real topics. And I saw this today, and Wendy and I talked about it briefly before we started here. Oh, now it's gone. There was an Ironman Coeur d'Alene thread on Facebook, or the Facebook group, and a girl, a lady, typed in there. She's looking for a plan. Now I can't find it. Looking for a plan for a 3-month plan, but doesn't want to pay a monthly fee. And someone started going, you know, the thread began of, oh, go to Training Peaks and you can buy a plan from a coach and it'll be built in for you. And goes, I don't want to pay for she wants a plan for herself, for her, but she doesn't want to pay for a coach. And so you can imagine the feedback of, you know, what do you paid for an Ironman Coeur d'Alene entry fee, which is hundreds of dollars, probably upwards of $600 or $700. That's just for the entry fee. Doesn't count the travel, all that. Yeah, everyone knows that. It's like, what are you concerned about for $100 or $200 on a training plan, but you don't want to pay for you want a personalized one, but you don't want to pay for a personalized one. And it just got me thinking, why are you picking and choosing these small areas to be a tightwad? What's your take on that when people are trying to get more for less?
You know, I kind of say this, you know, think, and I say it in a different way, but I've coached athletes previously who would sign up and do 2 or 3 Ironman, distant Ironman, like Cozumel, Cabo, Hawaii, you know, just destination money investments, Ironman, and yet they don't want to pay a higher price for coaching. So specifically, you know, athletes I started coaching, you know, 10, 15 years ago at a different price than I charge now. And they wanted me to still coach them, but they didn't want to go up at a higher price point. But yet they could afford to do multiple Ironmans at, you know, high spending price destinations. And that's really frustrating because they obviously have the money to spend on themselves for their sport, but they don't value the coaching like other people value coaching, you know. And then I coach some people who I know, due to life circumstances, shouldn't be paying for a coach. They should be spending their money on other things, other priorities based on their circumstances, but they value coaching so much. They want to invest in it because they know it's an investment in their mental and physical well-being. And so that's an interesting comment that lady made. And she also pointed out she didn't want to pay for a Training Peaks account. So I just also wanted to mention you can get a free account on Training Peaks and still follow one of our training plans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I just chimed in there and said, hey, right now, I didn't say me. I said that you can get a Ironman Coeur d'Alene training plan for $99 on Training Peaks from Coach Wendy Mader. And I just left it at that.
Mm-hmm. Yay, thanks.
And that, like, wow, that's a pretty good deal. Someone says Training Peaks is $129 a year. If you can't afford Training Peaks, you probably can't afford a coach. We spend more money on coffee in a month than people pay on for a Training Peaks account per month, you know?
You know, because we value coffee. I mean, coffee is a big part of what we enjoy in life. And that's just part of our livelihoods. And there's nothing wrong with spending a lot of money on coffee.
Yeah. So speaking of the $99, this is something that Wendy and I decided to do before 2023 is to put out a special for the first 3 months of 2023. All of our plans, and we've got dozens on Training Peaks, you can get a free account, are $99 or less. So for this young lady here, Andrea, you can get an Ironman distance plan and an Ironman Coeur d'Alene specific distance plan, which has course preview videos included for this year's course, for $99. And that goes for the half distance, which is less than $99, Olympic distance, and sprint prices. So what we're doing is we're applying a 33% discount on all of our plans, which bring them down to $99 or less for all distances. take it from there, Wendy, on what that value is and how they can take advantage of that.
Right. So if they just search Wendy Mader training plans on Training Peaks to see what we have to offer, and they go to endurancehour.com to get that code for 33% off, the price listed on Training Peaks is the price without the discount code. And then as soon as you enter the discount code, it'll bring the price down. I don't have them exactly in front of me, but I believe that sprint distance is like $29 with our code. And those Ironman event specific plans, as well as our just general beginner couch two and advanced plans, are all, I think they're offered, they're listed as $129, and then you apply the code and they go down to $99.
I've got the numbers here. So Ironman distance, it'll say $147. And that's, it can be one of our basic plans, like a beginner to an Ironman plan. You can have the couch off the couch to an Ironman plan, or you can have the Ironman Coeur d'Alene, Ironman, whatever, just fill in the blank, because we've got some specific ones this year. It'll say 147. You apply our code, it's $99. You see a 70.3 plan, it'll say 117, but it's okay. Apply our code, it's $79. The Olympics will say $73. It's $49. The sprints will say $43. It's $29. And every one of our plans have video links within them that we have produced for our plan. So if you have questions about it that we think that you might be popping up on how to adjust the plan based on your life, or you need to shift things around, we discuss those. So we include videos for these plans and the Ironman in 70.3 distances. When you see a specific race, let's say it's Chattanooga or it's Coeur d'Alene or it's California or whatever it may be, we've already done a course previews for this year's event. So that's included in the plan. Get one of those for free, young lady out there, and hope you don't have to pay for it. We're giving you extra value at no extra charge. But here's the bonus. We discussed before this podcast, we're going to extend it one more month. So the end of April, you have another month and a half. You can take advantage of any one of our plans. Once you own them, they're yours on Training Peaks. Keep them, reapply them next year. So one more month and a half at these prices, and then we'll probably discontinue the prices for the rest of the year. But right now, any plan, $99 or less. Wendy, we have a couple questions that you had received through email regarding the podcast. One of them in here is from Gabby. It's kind of a long one, so I'll read it here, and then Wendy can respond. Good evening, Coach Wendy. I'm reaching out about your couch to 70.3 Ironman plan. I've recently had a lot of thoughts about it due to being unreasonably unfit in comparison to how I used to be. I previously served in the Australian Army and also have done one or two triathlons. I have since then gained a lot of weight and I'm unfit, but I'm wanting to seek out a challenge. The thing is, I work FIFO role for deference and do two on, two off. I will be unable to go to the pool for 2 weeks at a time, although I am extremely strong swimmer and it's my best part of my swim, my race. Bike is my second strongest, but cannot for the life of me run, but willing to work on it. My question is, am I able to prepare properly for this based on my schedule? If I was to do one, I would look at doing the Western Australia 70.3 on the 3rd of December, 2023. Looking forward to hearing from you, Gabrielle. Coach Wendy, go.
Hey, Gabby. I had followed up with her on email, and it was a great question. There's a lot to dissect here. So first of all, I just want to start by saying, yes, if you follow a training plan, I think she's got, what, 8 more months until the race she wants to do, you can be successful. Based on your schedule, if swimming's your strength, and I've mentioned this before, then you can probably afford to not do as much swimming as the plan has in it, which is usually 2 to 3 days a week, and substitute a little bit more running since that's your weak link. Also, what I would do now, between now and when the plan starts, is do a run focus plan. So you start to work on your limiter, which is running, and try to, you know, find a run walk program, maybe build up to a 5K, 10K. Maybe you can already do that. So again, a lot of this is subjective, that she's saying she's unfit, she's out of shape, she's gained weight. I don't know what unfit to her means or how much weight she has gained. I also want to comment on, you know, depending on how much weight you've gained, how long did it take for you to gain that weight? And when is the last time you were at a weight that you were, you know, more happy with, you know, you felt better with? And to say just because you're following a triathlon plan doesn't necessarily mean you're going to lose weight. You want to make sure you maybe speak to a registered dietitian if that's the goal, if weight loss is the goal. I always, you know, encourage athletes to speak to registered dietitians to help them with a nutrition plan. And then once you get your nutrition dialed in with the addition of training, you probably will lose more weight, because if you're coming off the couch or you haven't been active in a while, usually that little bit of combination ensures that you're going to lose a little bit of weight. But I also want to encourage you to do the race you want to do without the weight loss goal. Have another goal, have another, you know, internal drive to want to cross the finish line besides the weight loss. And so also, each plan that we have on Training Peaks, we have a description of where we suggest you be before you start the plan. So it's very detailed on what we expect someone to come into the plan with, some sort of fitness, with being able to swim, number one, being able to ride. I think we suggested 20 to 30 minutes in this plan that you're referring to, and then being able to run or run walk a certain distance before the plan starts. And then following the plan as much as your schedule allows. You can flip-flop days. Like if you can't swim for a couple weeks due to work, well, you can, you know, change the days that you bike and run, maybe do some strength training or some band work in place of the swim workouts. Or like I already mentioned, add a little bit of running. You don't need to add too much running too soon, but just add another, you know, 1 to 2 mile, you know, run mileage a day in place of a swimming workout. I think that's totally fine. And then, you know, getting involved in our T2 endurance group for extra accountability and questions that you might have. And, you know, just being part of a community, you kind of learn what others are doing and you realize you're not the only one out there with your current fitness level and your current goals and desires to complete the triathlon.
We have another question, but you just mentioned T2 Endurance Club on Facebook. It's a closed private group on Facebook. We've got over 719 members in the group. Started this, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. And we've got two requests here for people to be allowed into the group, because you're saying it's a great place for encouragement, sharing stories, sharing links, sharing, getting feedback. Brianna wrote in here, we ask people, you know, answer these three questions so we know they're serious. How'd you hear about the group? She says, I purchased the 12-week Olympic training plan on Training Peaks from Wendy. And we asked her, what kind of plans is she training for? She says, in 14 weeks, and this was 3 days ago, I'm doing an Olympic triathlon on June 24th in Tremblant, Quebec, Canada. So she wants to be part of the group so she can, you know, have other athletes to talk to and maybe share information. So we're going to welcome Brianna to the group. Do you recognize that name at all? Kind of hard to...
No, I'm not. And I'm not in the group right now.
Okay.
But, you know, usually if someone purchases a plan for me, not usually, always, and they leave their email address, I will follow up with them and I'll let them know about the Endurance Hour YouTube channel so they can get more content, and I let them know that they should join our group.
So Brianna is now member 720. Mike also requested, he heard about us through the Couch, the 70.3 training plan. That's how he heard about us. And he's training for 70.3 Madison in Wisconsin. And yes, he has a Training Peaks account. That was our third question we asked. So there you go. He's in the group too. So he is member 721. Anytime when he puts challenges, post challenges within the group, there's discussions back and forth. You said something about this is National Nutrition Month. That's March.
Yeah. So I this year I've decided to try to come up with a theme each month to just kind of talk about specific, you know, theme related topics. In January, I put together an iron distance month of accumulation for the month of 2.4 miles of swimming, 112 miles of biking, and a marathon, just to kind of kick off the new year with something different, make sure people are getting motivated and active. And then in February, the topic was flexibility, mobility, and strength. And then for March, it's National Nutrition Month. So the topics that I'm posting and commenting on are very specific to nutrition, but there's all kinds of conversations going on. So I just like to highlight some sort of theme to get people, you know, thinking about certain topics related to endurance sports, and then they can just learn more based on the discussions going on.
One of those questions you posted was, do you have a meal plan on the weekends? This is you question asking to the group. And a couple of them says, Kevin, for example, I'm not a big eater compared to during the week. I do my grocery shopping Sunday evenings. I'll meal prep for the week. But during the weekends, I have my Shakeology, some energized drinks, maybe a small espresso, banana. That's pretty much it until my main meal in the evening. Even by then, I'm not always very hungry. And these are usually the biggest volume of your training if you are in a plan. Is it the weekends? Wouldn't you be a little more hungry on the weekends?
Generally, yes. I mean, a lot of times people are actually more hungry on their days off because because they haven't fueled enough on the days that they put in some training volume or intensity. And so they feel more hungry on the days off. And generally, people are not working on their weekends. And so that's when they spend extra time going to making a grocery list, going to the grocery store, buying meals, possibly prepping meals. Mm-hmm. If they have a very busy work week that they can just, you know, store in the fridge, grab a container, and leave their house.
Sounds very familiar to what you do, right? These containers, just put them there and then take them and go.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really specifically meal prep anymore, but I do have these perfect size containers that I like, that especially when I go coach the kids in the evening, I like to have a lot of snacks with me. So I know what can fit in each container. And so, you know, I kind of eat the same types of foods on a daily basis. I get a lot of variety, but I mean, I like what I eat. And so I don't need to prep anymore because I know what I'm going to have. You know, it's already something that's built into my lifestyle of I'm always going to have these specific foods every day. And so it's just a matter of making sure I go grocery shopping and I have them. And I do like to go grocery shopping every couple days. I don't like to buy a lot at once because I don't know, you know, even though I just said I eat the same thing, sometimes I want something different. So then I'll make a special trip to the grocery store just to get that specific thing because that's what I feel like eating.
This question from Jen, I'm not that good at fueling. I usually only bring water and chews on my 20-mile plus runs, and I'm not very experienced enough with long rides to know what to bring and what to eat or drink. I usually just eat and drink what others do. How do you respond to that, and is that enough for someone like Jen who's just bringing chews? I guess if they're calorie dense, that might be okay.
Yeah, so I followed up with Jen, and she is training for an Ironman. I think it's Ironman Coeur d'Alene, and that's in a few months. And so it's really important for her to start eating and drinking what she plans to for the race. And so that means when she's out on her 2, 3, 4, 5 or more hour rides that are coming up in her plan, that she's thinking about race day, how is she going to carry certain foods, what and when she's going to eat or drink. And so I always encourage her and other athletes to, you know, get in the habit of sipping your water bottle every 15 minutes. I used to have to start a timer on my watch to remind myself to drink because I used to go on 3, 4 hour rides and I'd be done with like a half a water bottle in that time. And I was always exhausted and it was a fueling issue, but I didn't understand that. I didn't have anyone around to tell me that. I had to figure that stuff out on my own. And so having a timer on your watch to go off to remind you, you know, sip your water bottle, eat a chew, or whatever you're going to do. You know, generally speaking, everyone should be eating in the range of, you know, 50 to 90 grams of carbohydrates per hour. And that's a big range. And that's something that you want to figure out for yourself. If you're a smaller athlete, you're going to be on the lower end. If you're a larger athlete, you're going to be on the upper end. And I do know smaller athletes who still can consume 90 grams of carbohydrate per hour race day because they've trained their gut to tolerate that much carbohydrate per hour during training. So it's really important. I think it's good that she's following what her riding buddies are doing. And at the same time, she needs to understand why they're doing what they're doing for them. And she needs to ask questions and help herself and figure out what's good for her, not just do what other people are doing.
Right. Yeah, it's really how your body responds. I know that when I would be writing early on, I would be having that 20-minute timer, even if I didn't, just to remind myself. And I had little markers on my bottles. This is kind of like, during races. Mm-hmm. And I would always try to finish a bottle, one bottle per hour of 20 ounces or something like that, some kind of combination of mix. But yeah, I had little markers on here because I usually had fuel. Like I used to put my gels within my water and then shake it up real hard and have little markers. I would know my bottle is so many calories. So I just need to make a big swig of whatever it is. And I know based on, 24 ounce bottle that if I've got, I know it sounds crazy. Like if I have 12 gels in there, which is really, it's not very fun. 12 gels in there, then okay, those are 100 calories a piece. That's 1200 calories. Okay, this bottle will last this long, but right. I can't consume it all. And if I have some left over by the time I'm done, I didn't consume enough, and I better, be prepared for that deficit on the run.
Yeah, that's a great strategy.
I would combine some of those because of how thick that water and gel was, because it's not tasty, but I'd mix it with some water, in addition to, so I'm hydrating, but also taking calories. It's all liquid calories.
Yeah.
But as general, this is what worked for me. I wouldn't want someone who I'm riding with doing the same thing because I don't know how their body's going to respond to it. My gut was prepared for it.
Right.
As opposed to maybe the power bars that people used to do in the back of the day, break off little pieces of power bar or a honey stick.
That was me.
Yeah. I used to do it too until it got too hot or it was too cold. And those things were either melting or they were hard as a rock when you tried to eat them. That's not good. And then the honey stinger waffles, I love those. And those were 150 calories, very, very carbohydrate strong. I think 100, maybe, forget what the carbs was, but 150 calories. So I know right there, only one of these an hour in combination with a gel and with a banana. And there's my 300 calories per hour. And that was just calories. So you figure it out. And if you're hungry when you're done, that means you haven't consumed enough. Usually that's how I've experienced it.
Yeah. And I used to eat a power bar, a gel and Gatorade and water an hour. So I was consuming about 400 calories an hour, which I'm sure is up in that upper end of 80 to 90 grams of carbohydrate per hour, if not more. Mm-hmm. And then I was fortunate enough that I got to go participate in a study at the Gatorade Sports Science Institute in 2007, where they have you bike for 2 hours indoors at the climate humidity of Kona, and then you run on the treadmill for 2 hours. And they do an analysis before this. They collect your urine, then they collect your urine during, and then they calculate, and then that you eat what you normally would eat during an Ironman. And they, told me you're eating too much for what you need. That could cause GI distress, which it never did. I had probably done 5 Ironmans up until this point. It never caused GI distress. So I was kind of in that good lucky range. That's why I can do an Ironman, because I do have a gut that can handle most things. And then, so they dialed me back to a bottle of Gatorade, which was 150 calories plus a gel plus water an hour. So they dialed me back to consume less calories. And then the year in 2008, I followed that exact plan and it worked for me really well. So everyone's different. Everyone's going to tolerate stuff. Being in the sport for 30 years, I've definitely shied away from gels and goos and blocks and all the power bar energy products, not power bar brand, but just those type of products. And I like more like real food. So I think it's really important that you find something that you want to eat. And it's also important to, if you know what works for you race day, because you have experience, don't always train with that. So I never drink Gatorade. I know it works for me. I save it for race day. So when I'm drinking it, it tastes good. And I want to drink it because I haven't gotten sick of it. And so I think you can burn out from certain nutrition products. So it's worth trying new things in training to see if that's something you can tolerate. Because it's always good to have a plan A, plan B, nutrition plan, as well as pacing plan when you race.
The Gatorade study, was that part of a team? Did you pay for it? How were you involved in that?
My physical therapist, Paula Nickel, her best friend worked there. And so they invited me there to do it for free. I didn't know until I got there, there was actual a multi-sports, which is based in California. There was a training camp going on that weekend. And so I was just integrated and part of this training camp, and I didn't have to pay anything. I mean, I had to pay for my flight out there. It was in Chicago, outside Illinois, not downtown Chicago, but it was right outside Illinois near Chicago. And so I just knew the right people at the right time, and I got to get it done. And it was so super valuable. It's probably one of the most valuable things I've done in my sport, is to be able to do something like that.
I'm sure they wanted the data too, right? So they can figure out how they can promote their product. That, you know, when you're talking about this, let's say you did have to pay for it, and now you know, and you had a performance in 2008, which was, you know, a personal best for you. This sounds very similar to that one, Andrea, for Irene Corlane, who doesn't want to pay for a coach, but she wants a plan that's for her. You went to this, you invested your time, and you flew out there on your own dime, and you got this valuable data. Without that data, your Ironman could have been just the opposite, but because you put in the time, because you invested in yourself, you had the results. Otherwise, you would have been training blindly, or training just hoping that whatever you do was doing would work, versus Andrea, who's going to she's going to try to look for a plan that's somewhat cookie cutter, but hopefully it fits her. And she's invested, you know, hundreds, maybe well over $1,000 to do this race, and goes, I wish I would have spent $200, you know?
Right.
And easily $200 into herself for a coach.
And I hired Rock Fry from Multisports Coaching that year because I had such a good experience with him and his athletes that were there as part of the camp. And they treated me like I was like, they treated me like they already coached me. And so I was looking for coaches that year anyways. And I just, you know, just in the matter of a 2-day weekend, I bonded and built relationships with the other athletes there and the coaching staff. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to invest in you guys to coach me. And then, like you said, you know, in 2008, I had the race of my life, and it all worked out. It was totally worth the money investment that I made, because that was one of my goals.
A lot of highly successful people say that if you invest in anything, invest in yourself. I mean, it's almost like going to college or taking a course. These people have already done it. They're going to give you the information you need to know and save you the time of trial and error.
Yeah.
So it's like, invest in yourself. That way, I mean, the clock is ticking on it for everybody. You know, there's going to be an end here. Why waste this valuable time that you have right now? As we hit 50, you and I, you know, we have statistically fewer days ahead than we do behind us, but make the most of it. That's all the questions we have and some topics for the day on this podcast. Anything else of noteworthy, whether it's personal, professional, podcast related, before we close it up?
Well, my friend Courtney texted me last week, and she goes, can you send me that video of you demonstrating flip turns? And so I did. It's on the Endurance Hour YouTube channel. And I go, why this specific video? And she goes, it's the best video I've ever seen about someone explaining how to do a flip turn. And so I thought that was really good feedback that I wanted to share.
Boy, yeah, I remember doing flip turns and these, you know, practicing the somersaults right in front of the wall just to do the somersault part without having a kick.
Yeah.
And I think we had some good footage underwater with the GoPro of you doing these flip turns.
Yeah, it's a good video.
Yeah. We had some really good stuff. I mean, I remember that we were at one of our camps and we dedicated our swim workout time just to make videos where everyone else was training for the camp. And they've been invaluable ever since.
Yeah.
Good demos. Well, with that, thank you everyone for listening. Listening to our hair stories, our fitness stories, and all that. And please take advantage of, for the next month and a half, of our deals on Training Peaks. You'll see the information on there. Just go to Wendy Mader. If you go to endurancehour.com, you'll see a link to the Training Peaks page. And that's also the place where you find the 33% discount code. It's endurancehour.com/33%. Type that in, give us your email, and we'll send you the code directly. That way you can apply it on Training Peaks. Pretty straightforward. That's all. No big deal. Hey, for Coach Wendy Mader, I'm Dave Erickson. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week of training, racing, or recovery. We'll see you next time. Adios.
Adios.